Hello, this is Mike Harbath, and this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. Welcome to 2021. As I've said a few times, it's the 2020 do-over. But no, seriously, we're looking forward to a great and prosperous 2021 for IT services and the industry in general. With that, I will introduce my partner, Ryan Barnett, who is joining me today. Today, we're going to talk about deal making, M&A deal making, and the secret sauce it takes to put a deal together. Ryan?
Hey, Mike, and also welcome to 2021. We're excited to kind of move deals through the pipeline, and I think this is going to be a year like no other, recovering from the hangover of 2020. And so today, you know, we're really talking about some of the things that we see are necessary in a deal that are a bit of the secret sauce. And today we're going to talk about what's it like to walk through a transaction? When should we talk to lawyers and how should we talk to them? Talk about the importance of timing and other deals to making at the table. So with that, Mike, I'd love to just start. What are some principles when you're starting to negotiate a deal? What are some just general principles that someone should be talking about when starting to look at deal making?
Well, I believe that no M&A deal happens that isn't a win-win deal. So maybe that's a something to think about, right? A deal has to be win-win in order to be effective, meaning that it's got to kind of be down the middle of the plate. Some people use a baseball analogy, like a pitch. It's got to be down the middle of the plate. It's got to be win-win. You've got to show some empathy for the other side. You need to be able to kind of walk a mile in their shoes and understand their perspective. Win-win deals involve compromise, right? Win-win deals are ones that everyone is a little bit, as crazy as it sounds, unhappy with the outcome, right? Buyers feel like they maybe paid too much and sellers feel like they didn't get enough. And you're looking for a way to achieve everyone's objectives. Now, every deal is different. Every deal has different attributes. But understanding clearly the folks on the other side of the table's goals and objectives, not just financial goals and objectives, but all goals and objectives for a transaction, is critical to finding a path to win-win.
And so how do you start creating that win-win? Let's back up a little bit. Can you give me a good example of a win-loss negotiation? What's something where, just a very clear example, maybe simple, but I'd love to just hear something that you've seen even in the recent past.
Well, certainly win-lose deals may include sleight of hand or trickery in the way the purchase agreement is written, so that they're designed to cheat the seller out of monies that they thought they were going to get. Okay, that would be an example of one that would be win-lose. Normally, a smart lawyer, and if they have a smart M&A advisor, are going to catch that scenario or attempt to do that, and that's a credibility buster for the buyer, where the deal gets blown up, where you're pitching something, where you're intentionally trying to cheat the one side or the other, that's generally not going to work out. Likewise, one might be where a price is paid that's substantially less than market. And certainly there's situational environments, and we're always very clear about advising our clients that, how you set value is when you have a willing buyer and a willing seller coming together on a transaction for price and terms. We certainly have guiding principles around what those numbers should be when you do a valuation or when you look at what market multiples, if you will, are being paid for a particular type of IT services company. And you can negotiate deals that get that are win-win, that are far below the market rate. So I don't want to make it sound like any deal that would be far below the market rate would be one that would not still be considered win-win. Likewise, you can negotiate ones that are far above market rate that are still considered win-win, particularly if the buyer can get to their return rates. And they can get there because you know, oftentimes win-win deals are such that each party can't get to the new destination of growth and profitability without the other, right? And so that creates a lot of room for negotiation on a transaction. So, you know, win-win deals are ones in which people feel like they've achieved their objectives for the most part. And like I said before, you know, you may feel like you could have gotten more money if you're a seller. You may feel like you've paid too much if you're a buyer. But in general, the lion's share of the objectives that you had strategically, culturally, and financially are met in the transaction.
Yeah, that's a really great point. When I hear that, it makes me really wonder. That's got to be hard to do if you're trying to do a deal yourself, because you're kind of inherently you're trying to represent the absolute best deal that you can. And when we're representing the clients, you know, we're representing their interest as well, whether that be on buying another company or helping someone sell their firm. Where do you find the role of the M&A advisor to get that so they are win-win? I mean, how, when you're advising, for example, on the buy side, how is it advantageous for the buyer to be in that kind of Trump-like situation, Trump card, not Trump president, compared to working the deal?
Well, I think what's challenging is, as a buyer or a seller, it's easy to lose your objectivity, right? Because you know your business very well, and you see the world somewhat through your perspective. In some cases, you could say it's rose-colored glasses. In some cases, you know, it just is confined by your perspective. And it's the average business owner or leader or private equity firm or whatever is not as much as they think they might be. They're not in the business of doing M&A transactions. They're just not. They're in the business of managing money, in the case of a PE firm, for a return for their stakeholders and constituents. And in the case of a strategic buyer or seller, you're in the business of running an IT services company. And because of that, it's easy to lose objectivity vis-a-vis your perspective. So, you know, you've often heard, if you listen to some of our other podcasts, we talk about the luxury of perspective. And we have that luxury of perspective. We bring that to the work that we do with our clients. We understand how other deals have been assembled, and we can bring that collective experience to bear. Likewise, we kind of know what's fair and not fair, and we can call that out in a transaction. We can call it out if a lawyer or a legal advisor on either side proposes something that's unfair, or that a client of ours may want something that looks more like a win-lose and is unfair. We can call that out. We can say, you know, this is probably not very fair to the other side. And in order to be win-win, fairness has to prevail. And we have to find a path that meets everyone's objectives fairly. And I think, you know, the art of the deal, if you will, the art of the negotiation is being able to find that spot and bring two different parties together. It's very rare that someone can do that on their own, on behalf of their own corporation. It's why the statistics are as low as they are in someone rolling their own M&A transaction. There's only statistically a 1% chance that someone is going to be able to construct a deal with the other side without an intermediary. So, I mean, I'll let that sink in a little bit. There's a 99% chance that deal's not going to work out if you approach someone to acquire their business or you're selling your business on your own. And that's simply because you lose the perspective of a win-win, and you also begin to get oftentimes negotiations fatigue, because there's hundreds of things that have to be negotiated in order to successfully get this done. So without, you know, you're trying to run your business, you're trying to not be distracted, you get fatigue and you'll start to make mistakes. You start to ask for things that may be perceived as win-lose.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Mike, I want to switch gears a little bit here. Since we're talking about this, kind of the secrets of the deal, I'd love to hear your perspective on timing. It's you know, we use a phrase internally, you know, time kills all deals. And I'd love to hear, you know, why is the case? And tell me a little bit more about what buyers and sellers should expect on timing. Sometimes it takes a bit to find the right target, and but once that target is identified and you're in the hunt, kind of what do you want to do with that time, and how do you want to manage it?
Yeah, I think where deals lose momentum, it's just like anything, right? Businesses that are growing typically have momentum for that growth, and they put some things in place and they continue that momentum and they grow the business. Likewise, if you're shrinking, you have momentum and it's hard to turn the corner on that. Deal momentum is important, right? And if you're moving a deal forward and consistently moving towards a set close date, you should do everything you can to keep that momentum. Anything that disrupts that momentum puts the deal at risk and slows down the deal. So you need to be responsive, regardless of what side of that transaction you're on, and regardless of whether you have an advisor or not. You need to be able to move the deal along to get to the next step or next phase or next portion of the negotiation. You need to respond to information requests on both sides in a timely manner. You need to be able to engage advisors, legal advisors, accounting advisors, other, a broker, advisor, M&A advisor, at the right time in order to keep things moving at the right pace. And without that, people lose interest. If you're a buyer and you're not moving things along appropriately, you have risk that a seller who's now open to selling will sell to someone else. It's a very hot market right now. It is very has a lot of activity, and it is in your best interest to get to a deal as quickly as possible with a seller. If you're a buyer, get to a term sheet, letter of intent, get to a price and terms that make sense so that you can lock someone up in a no shop, and then work through diligence in a proper manner in order to close. Likewise, if you're a seller, you have to be responsive to buyers, or they're going to move on. They're going to not be interested in actually getting to a transaction, or they're going to get distracted by a different deal. Because just like there is competition for buyers with companies that are selling, likewise, there's plenty of competition with active buyers or active sellers in their ability to do a transaction across the table. So, what you're trying to hedge against is the competition in a deal by moving things along. And if deals lose momentum, people lose interest on either side, or there's competitive forces on either side, that can mean you're not going to get that deal done.
I hear what you're saying, and as a seller, I'm always you're trying to optimize a deal, and sellers oftentimes thinking the best way to optimize a deal is to bring someone else to the table, and what I'm hearing is that's often difficult because a buyer should, if everything is right, the buyer should be executing quickly and getting to a letter of intent as fast as they can. What is your opinion of kind of that time frame if you do have multiple bidders at the table, and what should people be looking for and expecting in the case of multiple bidders, especially when it comes to the timing of the deal?
Right. So this is an interesting question because we get it a lot. There's some brokers that will say that they're going to run a quote unquote auction, right, for your business if you're selling. And that's going to net a higher price point. We don't agree with that opinion. We don't think for IT services companies, auctions actually work because there's so many attributes of a deal that are non-financial, right? The strategic attributes of the deal, the cultural attributes of the deal, because it is a human capital business, mean that IT services companies are not commodity businesses. right? And because they're not commodity businesses, it's hard to sell them like a commodity or in an auction. Very challenging to do that. So we think it's better to get multiple interested parties to the table and then facilitate a negotiation around and being transparent with where other offers are occurring in order to optimize a deal. All things being equal with cultural and strategic fit, that is the best way to optimize the price and terms paid for a business. So it's somewhat nuanced. It's not an auction. It is a quote-unquote multiple bidder or multiple interested party environment. And you have to balance, if you're a seller, the value or fit strategically and culturally with the offer and the timeliness of that offer. And so typically what occurs is you can use multiple interested parties, if you will, to accelerate offers, accelerate fair offers with parties that check all the other boxes. That is a big benefit. And it can also accelerate the price and terms paid because someone doesn't want to miss or lose out on the deal, even though it's not, for all intents and purposes, an auction. If you look at it from a buyer's perspective, what it means is just that you need to take the information and be decisive, right? You know, to the victor go the spoils, and the victor in this situation is one that can evaluate the merits and value of a competitive offer and determine whether a better offer makes more sense for you as a buyer, and or you can move faster than that other buyer in an effort to get a transaction done. We've represented many, many buyers that have actually won and been selected because we've moved faster. Not that the deals were more money or prior term, you know, higher, better terms or whatever, just that we were able to, along with our client, be more efficient in moving a deal along. And so, you know, that is as important. Speed in a deal is as important as price and terms in a competitive environment. And I would encourage you to be equipped, and whatever advisor you use, be equipped to move quickly and decisively to a deal.
Yeah, agreed. The first person to write that LOI seems to have a large advantage. Not only that they set the terms that the seller can react to, but also if it's signed, typically has that no shop provision. So it's critical to get that going and not evaluate every bit of the business before that LOI is written and executed.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, just to that point, Ryan, a lot of people want to get what I feel too much information before making a decision to write a letter of intent. Remember that when the competitive pressure is off and you have a signed letter of intent from a seller, you both, the seller and the buyer, have time to get to know each other better, determine the merits of the deal, prove out that both the financial, strategic, and cultural fit is there, and cultivate a win-win, further cultivate what is to be a win-win transaction. I think many buyers make a mistake in that they try to do all of that before putting out a letter of intent. And the buyers that do that miss the opportunity on a lot of deals, especially in the current market velocity. I think you're almost always better if the financial price and terms line up to get a letter of intent signed. And then while some of the pressure is off of the competitive environment, from the competitive environment, you know, further vet culture and strategy. If you spend too much time vetting culture and strategy before negotiating a letter of intent, there is a high likelihood that you're going to miss that opportunity.
Absolutely. And I think part of this is also, and we'll leave this as a departing thought, is picking the right team to help you get a deal done. If we've seen some secret to success is that especially when it comes to drafting the right purchase agreements and negotiating them. What kind of lawyer, Mike, do you have to have in order to get something done?
Well, in our opinion, and this is, you know, strictly our opinion, there are two kinds of lawyers, M&A lawyers, or lawyers in general that work on M&A transactions. There's what we call deal makers and deal breakers. Deal makers are people that work on behalf of their client to find win-win negotiations around the legal aspects of the agreement, and will work very easily with an advisor, an M&A advisor, to focus on the business terms of the agreement and strive to get it closed as quickly as possible. That are the attributes of the win-win or sort of deal maker lawyer. The deal breaker lawyer is really in the deal in order to run their billings up, and they want to bill as much time as possible in an effort to completely and utterly de-risk a transaction for their client, which is virtually impossible, as well as they want to control all of the business and legal negotiation points of the transaction. We believe that this is not the right way to go. Lawyers are valuable and critical to the process, but in their domain expertise is not in the nuance of the business terms of an IT services transaction. They bring their value to make sure that the legal components of the agreements are negotiated fairly and appropriately. And they're better off partnering, you're better off as a client partnering with an outside M&A advisor who has experience in the space. So, you know, as I say, when you're going to buy legal services, it's a bit of a buyer beware, a caveat emptor. You need to vet your lawyer to make sure that they're seeking to be a deal maker, one that wants to get a deal and a transaction done efficiently and quickly, and not someone who's simply trying to run their billings up and completely de-risk a transaction to the point of, you know, being ridiculous. The difference between these two lawyers is pretty simple. You can learn about how they are by asking what the typical billings are for them on a transaction of your size. And how they structure those deals. Many lawyers are now doing fixed fee arrangements for M&A transactions. Typically, deal maker lawyers will agree to that. Some will not that are deal makers. They still will bill hourly, but it almost no deal breaker lawyers will agree to a fixed fee because it flies in the face of their desire to run up billings. And whether they say that or admit to that, you know, deal breaker lawyers are, that is what they're actually doing.
Great. Now, Mike, these are a lot of helpful hints. You know, I'll leave our audience with this, that you got to listen for the rest of 2021 to keep hearing them. So with that, Mike, I'll let you wrap it up.
Sounds great, Ryan. Thanks a lot. And with that, we will tie a ribbon on this week's podcast, the first week of January of 2021. We wish everyone a happy new year. Hopefully you'll be healthy and happy and have a prosperous new year with your business this year. Tune in next week for next week's podcast. We'll put forth some additional advice on growth strategies and M&A tips for IT services companies. And, of course, at any time, you can see us on our website at revenuerocket.com for some of that same stuff. With that, take care and have a great week.